Meg's father died suddenly in January, and ever since, Meg had had to go straight home from school every afternoon to be with her grieving mother. Always a shy, reclusive woman, dependent on her husband for everything, Mrs. Quinn became even more reclusive, clinging to Meg and depending on her as she had Mr. Quinn. I was Meg's best friend, but Mrs. Quinn seemed now to resent it when I'd drop by. Grudgingly, she'd let me in, but insisted we stay home, so Meg and I listened to records or played games in her room. Once school was over, the summer days were long and boring, cooped up inside, and it was spooky how Mrs. Quinn drifted around the house like a shadow. By the end of June, Meg and I were desperate to get out of the house. A devout Catholic, Mrs. Quinn finally let us attend St. Xavier's annual craft fair one Saturday. We had a great time joking around with our friends and visiting the booths. Excited by such freedom, we decided to create the McNairys. A lovely family, mother, father, and two kids, who wanted us to babysit for them. If we could convince Meg's mom, the McNairys would be our ticket to afternoons riding bikes or swimming at the pool. When we needed to, we'd just invent a babysitting job. We schemed all afternoon, working hard to invent a family Mrs. Quinn would approve of. In their favor, the McNairys were Irish Catholics like the Quinns and attended St. Xavier's. We knew Mrs. Quinn would like that. Also, the McNairys lived in Park Hill, a neighborhood not far from ours where rich people lived in large homes that were much more distinctive than the small brick bungalows on our block. Meg's mother idolized the rich and famous, spent hours reading movie magazines about Hollywood stars, and Meg said she'd be impressed that the McNairys lived in Park Hill. Though reluctant at first, Mrs. Quinn finally decided it would benefit Meg to spend time around what she called quality people like the McNairys. So we began sitting for the McNairys three or four times a week. To our surprise, Mrs. Quinn became fascinated with them. When we'd return, she'd want to know all about them, how their house was decorated, what Mrs. M wore, how she fixed her hair. Meg and I actually began to look forward to telling her about the McNairys because she enjoyed it so. She often sighed and said, "Well, they're just the perfect family, aren't they?" And of course they were perfect because Meg and I had made them up. Over the summer, our stories about them became so detailed that we almost began to believe they were as real as Mrs. Quinn thought they were. One day in mid-August, we returned from babysitting to find Mrs. Quinn waiting for us with a sour look on her face. "Oh, you think you're so smart, don't you?" she said. "But I know what you've been up to." Meg and I froze. We saw our freedom evaporating. "Don't dare lie to me now," she said. "I know the truth, because I've just talked to Mrs. McNairy on the phone." I almost choked on my spit, but Meg, cool and calm, said, "Well now, Ma, tell us just exactly what Mrs. McNairy said. This must be a misunderstanding." We waited patiently to hear what the imaginary Mrs. McNairy had said to the very real Mrs. Quinn.
Oh, damn it.